The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
The Jericho Network on Westwood One.
Millions of dollars. Millions of dollars. All right, former WWE Tag Team Champions, the primetime players, Titus O'Neil and Darren Young are in the Talk is Jericho hot seat today. You'll hear where their name came from and, of course, the Millions of Dollars dance. I love that. How they both made it to the WWE separately, how they became a tag team, and then Darren gets real about what it means to be gay in the world of pro wrestling and what it was like finally coming out. Titus talks about his troubled childhood and the boys' ranch that changed his life. They've both got some seriously funny stories about driving around Talk is Jericho alumni, the great Kali, as well. They're both Kali assistants, Kali job boys.
Talk is Jericho, baby. Talk is Jericho. Talk is Jericho, mama. Talk is me.
All right, welcome to Talk is Jericho, the pot of thunder and rock and roll. The People's Podcast has arrived. The remedy for boredom is here, and let's go for a ride with the primetime players. They are in his house, Darren Young and Titus O'Neil, former WWE Tag Team Champions. They've got some great stories to tell, and I got some great stories to tell, too. Talk is Jericho, fanatics. How in the hell are you? Hope you're having a great week. Glad to have you back here on a Wednesday. Funny story, like I said, I was in Tallahassee the day for the very end of the Y2J summer tour, and I was flying to New York City, and I was going through Atlanta. So it's a 30-minute flight from Tallahassee to Atlanta, delayed for 2.5 hours because the bathroom door was broke in the lavatory. Shitters broke. It wasn't even that. It wasn't even the bathroom. It was actually the door to the bathroom. I'm like, it's a 30-minute flight. Can't you just put like a curtain up or tell people just to hold it? I think if you would have told everybody, listen, we can't close the bathroom door. The Biffy door is not working. Can you please not go to the bathroom during this flight? Or we have to fix the bathroom door so you can go to the bathroom during this 30-minute flight. I bet you everybody would have chosen, please, we won't go to the bathroom. We'll hold it. We've got 30 minutes. We can make it. But instead, I had to wait there for 4 hours, two and a half hours, whatever it was. Anyways, while I was there, I was reading a couple magazines about the furor that Donald Trump is causing by running for president. And it's amazing how he's doing in the polls, because people think, you know, he's a political novice. He doesn't really know a lot of things about the specifics, doesn't really have a lot of solid platforms. It's said a lot of outrageous things. And yet here he is leading the polls in a lot of these races that's going on. Here's my thing. All right. The reason why people like Donald Trump and the reason why someone like Kanye West is going to run for president 2020, whatever he said, is because people are sick of the stuffed shirt politicians. They like Donald Trump because he doesn't care. He just says whatever comes to mind, and as outrageous it is or as stupid as it might sound, people like that. It's a breath of fresh air, because all politicians that you see on TV are very same. They're very proper. They're prim. They do things by the book. They do things the way they're supposed to be. There's no fire. There's no originality. There's no character there. And I'm not saying Donald Trump's the right guy for the job. This is not a political debate on that. My point is he's doing a great job of appearing entertaining and being something different in front of the camera. I would like to go back in a time machine, and maybe somebody, if anybody was around back when Ronald Reagan was running for president, if it was the same thing. Because Reagan, of course, was a Hollywood actor, kind of a Hollywood B-movie actor, best known, I think, for Bedtime for Bonzo, which was a movie that he made with a monkey. Then he runs for president, and I bet you there might have been a lot of people going, what the hell does Reagan know about being a politician, even though Reagan was the governor of California, I believe. But the point being, he knows how to work a camera. He knows how to shake the hands and kiss the babies. And you're talking back about Tough Enough, saying that Tough Enough was a popularity contest, and that's why somebody won. That's why Sarah won. That's why Josh won. Isn't that what politics is, too? Isn't it just one big popularity contest? You know, I remember when Obama was running for president, I think he was up against maybe it was McCain, and I was like, it's obvious Obama's going to win because he's a rock star. He comes out there, he's got the poise, he looks cool. And McCain, you know, no disrespect, but he was an older guy, can't move his arms very well because of his injuries that he suffered as a POW. But still, I mean, you look at Obama and go, that's the guy. He's the rock star. And I think that's the same thing with Trump. Trump is kind of like the rock star of this race, to whereas people want something different. Now, if he gets an office, it could be a total shit show. But my point is, they like the entertainment value of it. And that's why he's doing so good in the polls. It's also such a long way away from actually electing anybody. He could totally poop out and flame out. But right now, the way it stands, Trump is in the lead. And I remember back when Eddie Murphy was doing comedy records, they were talking about Jesse Jackson and how, you know, black people would vote for Jesse Jackson as a joke, as a goof, as he said. And they'd be like, what? He effing won? And I think that could be the thing with Trump. People might vote for him just for fun. Hey, I'm going to vote for Donald Trump. And suddenly Trump's the actual president of the United States. And the thing is, he doesn't care what he says. He doesn't care any backlash that he gets, because he doesn't have to impress any sponsors. He doesn't have to go for any funding or beg for any funding or you know, do any of that kind of manipulation or networking for funding. He can just fund himself. And he's saying, you know, if I don't get into the candidacy, the Republican candidacy, I'll just go and run independently. And he will, because he can fund himself. So that's another reason he just does not care. So I think, once again, when you're talking about a guy that can just do it any way he wants to do it, and can do it completely unorthodox and completely unique and completely the way that people will go, you know what, I actually like this guy, that could be something that sways votes to his end. I remember in Canada back in like 92 or something, Doug Henning ran for prime minister. Doug Henning was a famous magician, an illusionist, kind of had buck teeth and a mustache, and he looked like he was in Styx, like in about 1978, had kind of the long hair, poodle hair, whatever you might say. So he ran for prime minister, and I remember him saying, if I can make an elephant disappear, I can make the deficit disappear too. And I was like, that's the best line ever. And I totally voted for him, and he got like 2% of the votes. But for me, I didn't know much about politics. I just knew that guy was funny and I liked him. Same thing with Trump. Trump is in the same boat, where he's doing something completely, now for something completely different. And you're thinking, oh my gosh, he's so funny and so unorthodox. And so I believe the saying is, get the buzzer ready, zero fucks given, that he might actually squeak in there for that very reason. And this is why I have a theory, and I read this, I think there's a Instagram posting that says it's for a certain celebrity to become the president, to run for president, and that celebrity is Bill Murray. I think it's for Bill Murray for president on Instagram. If Bill Murray ran for president, he would win today, because everybody loves Bill Murray, and that's the type of modern day politician I think you're going to get. Somebody with some kind of celebrity notoriety, like Reagan had in 1980, like Donald Trump has now, a Bill Murray, a George Clooney, somebody like that that wants to run for president could do very well. I mean, Kanye is a little bit polarizing, but that's the idea, in that you're looking for the anti-politician, somebody to kind of, you know, take charge and just tell us what's going on and don't be politically correct and just be you, be real. It's the same way that Clinton got elected, for playing saxophone on Arsenio and smoking pot, although he didn't inhale. Same reason why Schwarzenegger got elected into the governorship, and why he would have been the president if he would have had an American birth certificate. He just wasn't born in this country, so he couldn't be president. But everyone would have voted for Arnold Schwarzenegger because it's Arnold Schwarzenegger. So I think Donald Trump, if he keeps up and doing the way he's doing, maybe work on his platforms a little bit more, get a little bit more adept at what he's talking about as far as the details. And, you know, I'm going to say tone down some of his outrageous sentiments, but just continue doing what you're doing. He's not really offending anybody. The people he's offending don't like him anyways, but a lot of people are behind him because he's just completely unorthodox, doing things his way. I read somewhere, even, you guys can verify this, on the Twitter at Talk Is Jericho, that the Latino community loves Donald Trump, because they're saying that a lot of the things that he's saying is correct about, you know, illegal immigration and that sort of thing. So I don't know if that's true, but people that are kind of in America are maybe agreeing with Donald Trump. But point being, all the outrageous stuff that he's saying, it's actually working. Can you imagine your newest president of the United States of America, Donald Trump? I love the way he wears his baseball hat to do his speeches. Like, who wears a baseball cap to do a speech? Like, do presidents even, are they even allowed to wear caps? Trump is wearing one. Think about it, guys. It's a very weird, real possibility. Your new president, Donald Trump.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
All right, I'm here in the specially constructed podcast room with the tag team champions of the world, primetime players.
PTP's in the house, baby.
What's that?
PTP's in the house.
I love that the initials of PTP, primetime players. So a lot of requests for you guys. You guys are getting really popular now in your second incarnation as the primetime players, right?
Yeah. It's been fun second time around, especially when we got a opportunity to go for the titles at Money in the Bank, and now we're tag team champions, and it just feels like it was just meant to happen this time.
But Chris, I still have trust issues. With
yeah, but once someone turns on you, it's hard to forget that.
We're still trying to work through that. I'm keeping an abundance of Quest bars in my bag.
Keep them happy. What's your favorite flavor of Quest bars?
Cookie dough.
Cookie dough?
Yeah.
Is that yours too?
Yeah, cookie dough.
No, I'm an apple pie a la mode guy.
I actually
tried those
ones
too.
Yes, I warm them up.
Have you tried them?
No, I haven't tried those.
They're really good.
Yeah,
like those things are the best inventions ever. Yeah. So I always start thinking, like, is this like a Seinfeld thing when they're eating like the non-fat yogurt? Is it going to end up being like making us all fat? So, or does it really work? I'm wondering.
You got to be careful with the sugar alcohol too.
Well, now but is that a real thing?
Like, yeah, the sugar alcohol binds me. I don't know about you, but it binds the hell out of me. It's too much.
Oh, it binds you, like you get freaked out, or
no?
I can't go to the bathroom.
Oh, binds
stop,
you.
Stopped up.
Stopped up.
I wasn't familiar with that term.
Okay, like binds you. Oh man, if you want to get prune juice and all kind of stuff.
Now you guys are a classic tag team, in that you also travel together as well, right?
Yeah,
two of you guys.
Yeah. We were before we were in tag team, and we were traveling together.
Mm-hmm.
Darren's one of the first people to kind of reach out and help me when I first started, and get in the ring with me, and try to help me out. So we've always had that connection.
Who drives?
I do all the driving, because
not all of it. I've been picking up my slack lately.
I do majority of driving from the independents, like traveling the Northeast. So I'm used to the driving, but this guy to my right, you know, he just loves tweeting and always on social media, you know, which
and
is a
sleeping.
Great thing. And sleeping too.
Does he ever tweet while he's driving?
I'm sure he does. Yeah.
While you're sleeping?
Yeah.
Oh, he does it too.
I don't sleep because I get nervous when he drives.
Yeah.
You're not used to driving in the big city?
No, I just don't drive well.
How did you guys end up getting together in the first place? Was it one of these things where they just had two guys that weren't doing anything and stuck you together, or was it something you guys wanted to do yourselves?
No, we were on the NXT the second time around. Both of us were on NXT Redemption. And the season was only supposed to last like 6 weeks, and it ended up lasting almost a year. And so they kind of ran out of...
Just kept going?
Yeah, ran out of storylines, and I had become a good guy. Went from good guy to bad guy, back to good guy, all in a year. And but the backstages that me and him had and the chemistry we had both inside and outside of the ring was kind of a natural fit, and you know, they gave us an opportunity to kind of go out and be ourselves in the backstage segments, and that did well on NXT, and they said, hey, let's give them an opportunity on SmackDown and see what happens.
And I think it was John Laurinaitis that gave us SmackDown contracts, right?
Yeah, John Laurinaitis, hey, we're going to give you guys an opportunity and see if you can run with it.
Just make sure you don't fall up the stairs.
Yeah.
It's like my idea.
Yeah,
came up with. I said they announced you guys first.
I told you.
It's my idea.
I told you.
So you were at NXT twice, Darren?
Yeah, NXT 1 was a nightmare for me.
In what way? Because this was like, let me just set the tone here. NXT 1 was the huge takeover
that really kind of was the biggest thing in the company for a while.
Yeah.
The original NXT One, right.
Yeah.
You said that was a nightmare for you?
It was a nightmare because it was like American Gladiators. And I said to myself, if I wanted to do American Gladiators or American Ninja Warrior, I would do that because they had the obstacles,
right,
the challenges. It was just bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I feel like it exposed a lot of us because I'm not good at juggling or doing obstacles and stuff like that. So when fans see that, you know, they're like, oh, they're not going to take this guy seriously.
Mm-hmm.
But NXT now is off the hook.
Right. Mm-hmm. But the original, after that NXT season was done, who was your pro in that first season?
CM Punk.
So after that first season was done, then you guys got the call one day in Miami, I remember, that you were going to attack the entire company. Mm-hmm. So how was that for you? Because then now you're in the big leagues.
Well, for everyone, it was just nerve-wracking because, you know, a lot of the OGs that were on the roster, they were like, you know, who are these young guys? You know,
really?
You know, coming in and stuff like that. So we needed to deliver. And Vince McMahon said, you know, this is a big, big moment for you guys, and you need to deliver. And we did that night.
Mm-hmm. How was it for you, though, that whole 3-month period where you guys were kind of the hottest thing in the business?
It was fun. It was fun. We did a lot of things, and I feel like it ended a little too short.
Mm-hmm.
SummerSlam was the culmination. I think it was 707. I believe you were part of it, too. And I feel the Nexus should have, you know, been on top, you know, should have won, and I think it would have even bettered our value.
It would have extended your guys' shelf life for a while as well, right?
Sure.
But I remember talking to you guys when it first went down and saying, like, you know, for you guys, like, some of you guys, this will be like the peak of your career. Other guys, this is just the start. Some of you guys won't even be here next year. And there's a couple of guys that aren't here, but most of the guys are pretty much here still.
It's me, Heath Slater, Daniel Bryan, Wade, Ryback. That's about it,
right? Yeah. Exactly. So when that whole invasion was done, did you kind of get thrown by the wayside, or did you have something going on after that?
Well, I was billed as like the weakest link, so I was like battling Wade, and you know.
Right, you were the first guy pinned in the 7-on-7, I think.
Yeah, me and Angry Michael Tarver. Angry Michael Tarver. So
I got a punch.
Yeah, so I think the next night after we lost, we all called out the WWE superstar, and I called out John Cena, and the biggest guy in the company, I called him out, and we had like a 15-minute match on Raw. I lost, and that's when the Nexus kicked me out because I didn't deliver, and it was a lot of the guys backstage were like, oh man, this Darren Young can go.
Mm-hmm.
He can really go, and I went 15 minutes with John.
Because up until then, you're just doing short matches or big group matches. You're actually you were the Black John Cena.
Yeah, Black John Cena, Buckwheat. I wish I made his money though.
Oh yeah, right, yeah.
But yeah, it was wacky.
So then you get kicked out of the NXT and then end up back in NXT?
Yeah, I got kicked out of I got eliminated from NXT. I did the Nexus, they kicked me out, and then it was time for redemption, and that's when I really, you know, had great moments with Titus and everyone else that was involved in that season.
What did they say to you, though? We're just going to put you back into the NXT thing again and see how it goes?
Yeah, they just, you know, I'm a great, great talent in the ring, and, you know, they felt like, you know, let's try this opportunity again with you.
Mm-hmm.
And they did, and I did well with it.
Who was your pro that year? Very made a mark on your career, right? You think about it. Who was your pro that year, Titus?
The first time around, it was Zack Ryder.
You were in it twice, too?
Yeah.
How many times did you guys get to do these things?
I was the first one eliminated for the first season. But I had just, mind you, I had just signed with the company like 4 months before.
And didn't you sign with like Batista's neighbor or something like
well,
this?
Well, yeah. I just was driving down to South Tampa and David told me where the school was, and he had talked to me a few times and said, man, you should try it out. And I was like, man, I'm not doing that. I wanted to coach, and that's what I was going to go do. But I was driving down to South Tampa one day in the place which you probably have gone, across the street where the guys got their boots and stuff fixed. Mm-hmm. I used to take my dress shoes over there all the time. So I never really knew about FCW until I actually went over there, and I went in the back door and said, hey, I want to talk to somebody about possibly giving this a try. And They said, well, Steve Kern and Dusty need to be the guys you need to talk to, but they're not here right now, but I'm sure they, you know, would love to talk to you. And so that was Norman Smiley who told me that. Mm-hmm. And so I left, went and got my kids. They told me to come back that night because they had a TV taping that night. So I left, got my kids, asked them if they wanted to go to a wrestling show, and they said, yeah, sure. And we went back, we watched the show. I looked over at TJ. I said, is that much my oldest son? I said, is this something you think you'd like to see me do? He's like, yeah, sure. And then I asked Titus, you know, do you think I can do this? And Titus was like, yeah.
Titus is your other son?
Yeah, my youngest. And we went to the back after the show was over, talked with Steve and Dusty for like 15 minutes. And then as I was driving home, John Laurinaitis gave me a call and said, hey, you know, Steve and Dusty talked high of you, or spoke highly
that
of you.
That quick?
Yeah.
And it was a quick, yeah, quick call.
Then, yeah, so he called me.
They said, we got this big Adonis-looking guy here. He better sign him.
And, yeah, 2 weeks later, I was signed, and I went up the following week. The next Tuesday, I was up on a plane to Pittsburgh to go take my physical, and then the week after that, I was in the ring bumping around.
Right?
Yeah. If I hadn't signed that quick, I would have been at Florida coaching.
Because you played in the NFL or you played college football?
Yeah, I played in Jacksonville. I went and tore my ACL in Jacksonville. Then I played arena football for 6 years and had talked to Coach Meyer and some of the staff there. And I've always been welcome back to the University of Florida to do anything I want to do.
Right, so then the wrestling opportunity came up.
Yeah.
And you took it.
And I was going to, you know, I was going to coach. I legit and I'm going to still do it.
You still can, eventually. Right?
Yeah. So,
but Darren, you've been working for a long time before you came to the WWE, right? You work in independents and stuff like that.
Yeah, I started in 2002 working in the Northeast.
Okay.
So, I mean,
so you had a good 7-8 years before the whole NXT thing happened.
Oh yeah, yeah. And I did. I was a local whenever the WWE would be in the Northeast, New Jersey, New York, PA. I did a lot of traveling, and I was always in the area. I did tryout after tryout with WWE, and they closed the door in my face so many times, and it was actually in 2009 when I did a paid tryout in Tampa, and I beat out 75 guys and girls from all over the world.
Wow.
In a
four-day
tryout.
One of those, like, seminar tryout things?
4 day tryout.
Where you pay?
Paid, I think.
They pay you or you pay them?
I paid
them. You paid them, right.
And I was a maniac because I wasn't leaving. It was like my last resort. Because
last chance.
If I hadn't gotten signed, I was number three on the fire department test in a town where I lived, and if I didn't get signed, I would have probably been a firefighter right now.
Mm-hmm.
So,
who else was in that camp? Anybody else that made it through, or was it all just hopefuls?
AJ or not?
Oh, AJ Lee got signed the same day I got signed. Mm-hmm. She was crying her eyes out, and I was very happy for her.
Mm-hmm.
Very happy for her. She's from Union City. I'm from.
Oh, that's
Union,
right. You guys are both Jersey.
Yeah.
Jersey kids, right?
Yeah, so I was happy for her.
So when you guys started getting together to put together Primetime Players, was that your idea, that name?
Yeah.
And what was the concept of the name?
Just because we both felt like we deserved an opportunity to be on primetime television.
Mm.
You know, so we just felt like we had worked extremely hard, both inside and outside of the ring, and we represent the company well. And we deserved an opportunity to go out there and get better like everybody else.
And then what are the millions? Millions of dollars. That's the best part.
Yeah. Well, that came,
millions of dollars. Millions of dollars.
Yeah.
I saw you guys do that on Tough Enough, and I was like, I was jealous, man. I wanted to try that. The fire department?
Well, that came about by accident.
Yeah.
Because I was driving, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I was driving.
As always.
Yeah. I was driving.
He was texting or sleeping.
Yeah. And I was woke.
Kind of driving recklessly. And I think the big man said, damn, you don't lost your mind? You got millions of dollars in this car. And I just started cracking up.
Yeah.
And the rest was history.
Yeah,
you got $1 million in this car and me.
Yeah, exactly.
No, I told him you had. Yeah.
That's what Art Anderson used to say. You know how much $1 million talent in this car and the Disco Inferno?
Yeah.
So where does the dance come from?
The dance just comes from me being in a sports huddle. If you look at football, even now, like, every Saturday, and even basketball, you see them all huddled up, and they all swaying to the left and right.
Okay, when you score a touchdown, too, you kind of got that little swag to you.
Yeah.
But, big man, I remember that dance coming about. I think we beat Yoshitatsu and Zeke, And we got a like first
formidable team.
Yeah.
We got our first W, and we were going crazy.
Back
and forth. That's how it came.
Yeah, it just naturally happened. But yeah,
we did it.
Just
was like, we won. Yeah. We won. So when you guys start with that, it was designed as a heel gimmick, correct?
Yes.
It was the heel thing.
Yeah.
But it's pretty catchy.
Mm-hmm.
So it starts getting over,
yeah.
Right? So when you guys broke up the first time, were you guys heels or baby faces?
Heels.
They just thought you had gone as far as you could go with it, or what was the deal?
No, I don't know.
One of those things?
Know. Yeah, it's just...
Yeah, I still don't know. I was furious.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. I was furious.
Why is that?
Because there was no like reason to it. There was mm-hmm. no like build-up. It's just like that morning we did media, and that afternoon we were breaking up. So there was no like story behind it, like, you know... He's trying to get a singles push, or he's trying to outstage me, or vice versa. There was nothing to it. He just turned on me.
For no reason.
Yeah, I mean, if there's a story behind it, that's great. But it was just like out of nowhere.
Just done.
Yeah.
I remember we had a the only time I ever worked with 3MB, mm-hmm. and we were, I think, Grand Rapids or something. I was working with, let's say it's Slater, mm-hmm. and the word came down to, so by the way, if you beat Slater, that 3MB has to break up. We're mm-hmm. like, what? Like, it's a three-minute match on Raw. Like, seriously?
Yeah.
Like, why?
Yeah.
And then, of course, it changed, and then it changed back, and then it changed. But I think sometimes ideas sound good for a moment, so let's do it.
Yeah.
You know, but then you guys get left to kind of pick up the pieces with that.
Mm-hmm.
You know? But that's kind of how it is when you're here. I mean, you know that at the time. So what do you do when you had to break up?
You got injured.
Yeah, I got injured shortly after. I had a little vacation, tore my ACL. And,
that's right. You were up for a while.
Hidalgo, Texas, wrestling Fandango.
Mm.
Just doing a double axe off the apron, and I just straight leg down, tore my ACL and MCL.
Not always the way, just something, not even a nothing move. It means nothing.
Yeah.
And that takes a long time to come back from that one.
Yeah, I was back in 8 months. I was like in rehab. I was like Ray Lewis. I was a maniac because I don't.
No days off.
No mm-hmm. days off. I live it, breathe it, and I try to spread that message to everyone.
So when you're, do you take this as kind of like a, oh shit, or you take it like, okay, I'm gonna use this for what it's worth, clear my mind, get the 8 months, and then come back stronger than ever?
Yeah. I mean, I was heavily involved in speaking engagements with the LGBT community,
mm-hmm.
so I always stayed busy. I was busy with the Be a Star program, and I went a little crazy for a little bit because I was home.
Stir crazy?
Yeah. I stayed busy. Like I said, with the speaking engagements and rehab.
Mm-hmm. And then what are you doing at this time?
Just sporadic singles matches.
Here and there?
Whoever.
And right.
Yeah, it was very frustrating time just because, you know, you out-pitch ideas and get told one. I mean, like you say, it's the business of you get told one thing and then something else happens and this and that. You never really know what the truth is.
Mm-hmm.
And
Big Man missed me a little bit.
Yeah.
A little bit, yeah. Missed your partner on the road.
Yeah, I definitely missed it. Missed him.
Didn't want to drive him around.
Yeah, nobody drive him around. Well, Seamus drove me around. He loves driving. Both of them love driving.
See, I'm the same. I don't like not driving.
Yeah.
Like anywhere.
Yeah.
I think it's just over the years, you just get used to having your own pace. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I'm horrible at snow and rain, too.
Well, you're a Florida boy.
Yeah.
See, he's a Jersey boy. It's okay. Yeah.
He drives in the snow like he's driving on a clear road.
Like, well, you got to learn how to do that, man. And what's going to happen if you guys get split up again?
Hey, well, we're still driving together.
You're going to be like Great Khali and have to get someone to drive you around all the time?
No, no. We still ride together.
I did Khali duty.
Yeah. Did you really?
Yeah, I did too.
And he didn't
you
pay
both
for
did.
Yeah. He didn't pay for a damn meal.
Yeah.
See, this is what I've heard.
He hears this.
That's what TJ and Natty said. Like, he wouldn't even put gas in the car.
No,
like, come on, dude.
No.
Throw
yeah.
something in.
No money. No.
How do you draw Khali duty?
What they ask you.
Hey, Darren.
They run out of people to volunteer to do it.
Yeah.
But I love doing it because
he's really not like
he's a great guy.
Yeah,
but,
But he can be a little demanding.
Yeah.
Like what?
But you have to be demanding back to him.
Yeah.
It's like, hey man, brother, I'm hungry. Well, you should have ate. You know, two stops ago when we stopped at the gas station.
Yeah.
With everybody else. I don't eat that. All right, well, you won't eat because we got to get to the next town.
Eat that, so, brother. Find a Denny's.
Yeah,
brother.
Find a Denny's because he wants to. Hey, bro. Yeah, Denny's? It's 2 o'clock in the morning. He wants us to go and sit down, have a meal, and we still got 200 more miles to go. No, coffee. Hey, bro. Sit your ass back, eat this Snickers bar.
But that's the hard thing when you're traveling with a bunch of guys. Yeah. Like, that's why, like, I used to travel with 8 down to 6, 4, 2, and that's just me. Like, I don't like traveling with anybody else because I'm on my own pace at this point. Yeah. It's so important to find the right partner to travel with, which is why, you know, you guys traveling together and working together, I mean, that's a pretty rare thing.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, we complement each other.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I book pretty much everything and make sure we got places to work out and train and, you know, he's got a closet full of free stuff. So it balances out, you know. I take care of him.
Titus is always working it, man.
No, I just got a lot of good friends and good places, so it works out.
Exactly.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
So when you were off and you mentioned the LGBT community, when you came back, is that when you came out as gay?
No, it was going to be 2 years coming up.
It was before.
It was before you got hurt?
Mm-hmm. It was before I got hurt.
Really? So you made the announcement, then you got hurt?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I got you.
We were actually baby faces when we broke up then.
You sure?
Yeah.
I don't remember. You know me, my memory.
Yeah, because when you came out. Yeah.
Selective memory too, right?
Yeah. Well, that too.
But that was a pretty courageous thing to do. What kind of prompted you to finally make that announcement?
I just felt like it was the right place, right time. Mm-hmm. And
TMZ camera, right?
Yeah, and I said what I said, but after I was done saying what I said, I went back to the hotel and I was just sick as a dog.
Really?
Yeah, I was like...
Why is that?
I was terrified because I didn't know how people were going to perceive me.
Mm-hmm.
And I called WWE right away, but before I called WWE, I called my best friend from New York, Trouble, and I said,
Trouble.
I said, yeah, that's his independent wrestling name back in the day. But I said, what should I do? He said, call someone from WWE and just let them know what happened. And I called someone from WWE, and they said everything was going to be okay, and the news broke, and I had to do a Be a Star the next day. And I told Stephanie, I said, I can't do it. I don't want to leave the hotel room. Hmm. And she assured me everything was going to be okay, and I was happy I did the Be a Star. Now I do them on a regular basis.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I was very fearful of how people were going to think of me.
You afraid that people were going to be like catcalling you and throwing things at you or something? Or?
That and, you know, family too.
Your family didn't even know?
Well, my close family knew. Mm-hmm. My close uncle and grandfather, who were old school, I was very afraid of them finding out the news, but they were very supportive.
Mm-hmm.
Very supportive.
Did you know, Titus?
Yeah.
You guys knew?
Yeah, it was his decision whenever he was ready.
But, I mean, does it really make a difference?
It doesn't.
You know what I mean? Like, the thing that makes, like, it's such a big thing to say, but I can't see why anybody would make a big deal of it unless you're, you know, close-minded or whatever it may be, but...
Yeah. Yeah, I think some people might have felt uncomfortable, and people that used to talk to me don't really talk to me anymore, but it is what it is.
Really? So there were some people that kind of changed?
I mean, everyone is still nice to me, but you can just tell people's demeanors.
Mm-hmm.
Some people's demeanors change, but...
Even within these walls?
Just everywhere.
Yeah.
Just everywhere. Everywhere in general, but it is what it is. I come here to entertain and...
Well, the thing is, though, like, especially being in the WWE, I've been here for 16 years, and my number one biggest mentor in the business is Pat Patterson. Mm-hmm. Like, taught me 90% of what I know on how to put together a good match. And The Rock will tell you that, and Sean will tell you that, and Brett will tell you that, anybody that's worked with Pat. And we all know he's gay, and who gives a shit? He's a genius, he's a great guy, and we love him, and whatever. So that's why it would surprise me if anybody had an issue. But then again, you know, everyone's got their own different way of doing things. But did you ever talk to Pat about this at all?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Did you?
Oh, yeah, we've talked about it, and Pat's just funny. Yeah. He thinks I like to party. I said, Pat, I don't party, man.
He's like, what do you mean?
Because he's asking a question.
Yeah, because he lives in Florida. He's like, oh, and I live near South Beach, and he's like, oh, do you like to go to the bar? I said, no, Pat, I don't really like to do that. He's like, why not? He's like, sometimes when I'm down there, I like to, you know, have a couple of drinks, and, you know, it gets late, and I just get a hotel room.
Have a couple drinks and have a good time. Yeah. Come on.
I said, no, Pat, I don't do that. I just like to people watch and go to the beach and relax.
Pat's going to show you the hot spots, right?
Yeah, I told him. I said, yeah, Pat, you got to show me where to go.
But, I mean, like I said, it's you know, a friend of mine is Rob Halford. He's a singer of Judas Priest. And in the 80s, he knew he was gay. And being the gay singer of a heavy metal band was very taboo. Now, nobody cares. Yeah. Times have really changed over the last 10, 15, 20, 30 years to where it's like, hey, whatever, big deal. But I can see why that would be something that he had to bear that cross for years because of the world he was in. You know, is it being in the pro wrestling world, what do other people in the gay community think of like you being a wrestler? Is it like a no big deal or is it like cool or?
Oh, they think it's cool and they support it. And, I mean, at the end of the day, I just want to be able to be a good representation for the LGBT community on WWE television or any platform that I have the opportunity to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, you know, they've all been supportive, the LGBT community.
Mm-hmm. Because you're kind of your celebrity, too, right? You work for the WWE, you're an international superstar. So that's a good thing. Yeah. You know, you're like, you could be almost a role model in a lot of different ways.
Yeah, absolutely, because now my job is to, like, help others that are dealing with the same issues I was dealing with, because just for example, when I would do promos on the Independence, I would do my promos like this, because I didn't want people to think that, you know, I could be feminine and stuff
right.
like that. So at the time, I was Bone Crusher Fred Sampson, so I would cut my promos like this, so no one would think that, you know, think anything of me.
You're overcompensating, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I hated it.
Yeah. I understand because it's not you.
Yeah.
But now that you're you and you've come out as a gay man, nothing changed. You're still...
No, I'm just able to be myself and just talk and not have to worry about what I'm saying. And I don't have to worry about, I don't want to name a particular wrestler, but say, oh, you want to go to the strip club? Hell no. I'm not going to no damn strip club. You know, I've been to it plenty of times.
Hello.
Yeah. And, you know, back in the day, I was miserable.
Yeah.
Miserable. I would go, and I'd be miserable. But
so
not,
you would have to
anymore.
Put on the facade that, like, yeah, dude, let's go get some chicks.
I hated it.
Wow.
I hated it.
So you would go out just to try and fit in?
I would be a fly on a wall. My back would be against the wall. I'd be so uncomfortable. So uncomfortable. But now I don't have to deal with it anymore.
How did you feel about that, Titus?
About
your partner being gay?
Oh, I don't care.
Right.
I mean, I have family members that are gay.
Mm-hmm.
I love them to death. You know, I love him to death. You know, he stays over my house when we have shows in Florida, and my kids call him Uncle Fred.
That's cool.
And I don't care. I've never cared about someone's sexual orientation or race, for the matter, because, you know, when I was younger, people from all walks of life, you know, gave me an opportunity or invested in me when they didn't have to.
Mm-hmm.
And it was my gay English teacher that, before she was my English teacher, told me in the ninth grade that, you know, I'm going to make sure that you don't fail here.
Mm-hmm.
Because I went to high school in a predominantly, a very, like, segregated town. At our football games, the black people sat on one side and the whites sat on one side. And we won 4 state championships in a row. And you think that
really?
Was, yeah.
What year was that?
96, oh, 93.
And where was that?
96. It's Live Oak, Swanee High School.
In Florida?
Yeah.
So it was segregated in 96?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's incredible.
And it's like it's not legally segregated.
No, but.
But if you go to the games, you would see all the blacks sitting in one section and all the whites. And everybody's cheering for the same team. But yeah, she was gay. She was white. And she was really the honors 11th and 12th grade teacher, but she just took a liking to me. I was a kid that was coming from the Florida Sheriff's Boys Ranch, so I wasn't even from Live Oak. I was there as a kid that was trying to turn his life around. And, you know, her, the superintendent of schools, and my high school football coach really invested in
me.
Made
a difference.
Yeah, like a huge difference. And my high school football coach was a... in some cases, to some people, he might have been a redneck, but I loved him to death. Chewed tobacco every game, got fined every game for chewing tobacco on the sideline.
The coach?
Yeah, every game. Got fined. And so I've been very fortunate. And the guy that kind of really helped me turn the corner as far as faith was concerned was a homeless guy, which is why I have a heart for the homeless. He was a guy that used to be at our track every day watching football. Watching practices, and one day I was walking in, and he said, "Can I speak to you for a second?"
And this is a homeless guy.
Yeah. And everybody treated him well, though. Like everybody treated him like family there. But he said, "I want you to understand that you have a very powerful presence, and God wants to use you, and He's going to use you in a very mighty way." And this is my 10th grade year, and from that day forward, I used to talk to him, and then he got me going to church more. And that was a really pivotal point for me as far as believing and understanding, like having faith and learning about, like, accepting people. Because I was in a place where I was one of only, like, 3 black kids on the boys' ranch anyway out of 114.
And a boys' ranch is for, like, kids
that were
don't have any.
Yeah, they were, like... Well, in my case, I was very, I was poor because my mom was a single mother. Mm-hmm. I lived in the projects. I used to get in trouble in fights all the time. And fortunately, we ran into a friend of a friend that worked at the sheriff's office and knew the sheriff very well and said, "Hey, we want to give this guy an opportunity." And I was on a list of, like, thousands of names because
just to get into the boys' club?
To get in the boys' ranch. And,
boys' ranch, yeah.
Got the opportunity, and I mean, I say it every interview that's asked about, like, what's the pivotal point of my life, and it was literally going to the Florida Sheriff's Boys Ranch, because I was always told I'd be dead or in jail by the time I was 16 or 17, because my first instinct was to fight. Grew up without a father, didn't really have much male guidance growing up except for, like, coaches, but, you know, you're only around them certain periods of time, and so... I had decided that I wanted to, like, really just demolish stereotypes, especially of the African-American male.
Right.
Coming from a poor background right. Without a father. Don't tell me, you know, black men can't be good fathers. Don't tell me
you're the father of the year.
Yeah, yeah. And don't tell me, you know, that black men are dumb and are uneducated when I see numerous guys that are educated.
Mm-hmm.
I have a master's degree.
That's a stupid thing to say.
Right, but it is something that has been, athletes are dumb jocks or whatever it may be. So my point, you know, everywhere I've been has always been to be able to just let people see God in me and see love in me. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I have a master's degree from the University of Florida. When I used to be an F student, DNF student, I was a DNF student because I just didn't give a shit. I didn't care about
it. Had no motivation, right?
Well, once I realized, like, that there, when that guy told me that, it just shot my whole academic progress into the next gear.
You're going to get out of there.
Yeah. And my high school coach, he tried to run me off my first year, my ninth grade year. I had to run, you know, 72 trap plays in a row.
Why was he trying to run you off?
Because I wasn't from there, and two, because, like, I'm this way now, daring to tell you, and anybody hang, like, I just don't give a shit. Like, I don't care what people say.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I believe what I believe, and there's nobody that's going to change that. Mm-hmm. Nobody's going to force me or bully me into thinking a certain way. And so Coach had a very intimidating way about him, but you can't scare me. I've stayed in a two-bedroom apartment and gunshots going off in the background and seeing other people get stabbed and shot. Like, you can't scare me.
Mm-hmm.
So he ran 72 trap plays, me and a guy named J.W. Hardy. I ended up going to the hospital. And for cramping, and came back the next day, and I went to his office. I said, "Coach, you know, I don't know what it was that you were trying to do, but I just want you to know that I'm going to be one of the best high school football players that you ever coached." And he was like, son, you haven't even made the team here yet. And I said, coach, I didn't tell you I made a team. I told you I was going to be one of the best in high school players that you ever coached. And so injuries happened. I ended up getting moved up to varsity in my ninth grade year and then starting my sophomore and junior year and ended up being the number one recruit in the country. And I looked at him at the end of the, right as I was signing, and I said, you remember what I told you 4 years ago, right? He's like, you're damn right, I'm proud of you.
I told you so.
Yeah.
But I mean, that you guys are both very inspirational, you know, talking about having no father, now actually getting awarded the father mm-hmm. of the year, being a gay athlete in a very macho, male-oriented vocation. Did you ever hear of a guy called Chris Kanyon, Darren?
Yeah, yeah. Billy Kidman talks very highly of him. They were best friends.
And this is why I'm very intrigued by when you came out as a gay man, because I was friends with Chris too. Not best friends, but pretty good friends with him. In the WCW days, he was one of the brothers, you know? And he ended up committing suicide because he was gay. And I think he might have come out, not because he was gay, but he had a lot of issues. But I think one of them was for years he was gay but never admitted it, never said it. And we knew, like, you just know. You know what I mean? At the strip club, uncomfortable, never with a girl. It's like, just say it. No one cares. But he would never take that plunge. And it drove him to really losing it, you know? And it makes me sad, because if he would have done what you did, he might still be here. He might not, but it just would have been nice to kind of see what would have happened.
Don't you feel it would have been a little bit tougher back then?
Yes.
It's a little easier now.
Darren, absolutely, because this was the 90s. Like I said, Rob Halford, 1985, being the gay singer of Judas Priest. Yeah. You can't do that. It's heavy metal. Yeah. It's chicks and drinking, whatever. Same thing in 96, 97. Him coming out as gay would have probably been harder for him than it is now, because now we're very politically correct, and rightfully so, you know, but also very open to everyone just doing your thing. Whatever makes you happy, just don't hurt other people.
And it's a shame, because I like Cannon, because he was very innovative.
He was a very innovative guy, very funny, fun guy to hang out with, but there was always that cloud. And he actually wrote a book that came out after he passed away, where he basically, it's like a manual. This is how I felt. This was terrible. And telling stories about having to go meet somebody, you know, in the middle of the night because he was too scared to have them come to his house or his hotel or whatever it was. And it just kind of saddens me to know, like, if it was a different time, maybe he could have had a different, you know, different fate. You know, how did you feel when you finally gave the announcement?
I mean, like I said, when I said what I said to TMZ, I was sick as a dog.
But I mean, after that, finally, the first couple days.
Oh, afterwards, my first live appearance was on Raw, and Titus and I were taking on Cesaro and Swagger, and the response that both Titus and I got was unbelievable at the Staples Center.
And that is in Ontario. Oh, Anaheim, I'm sorry.
Anaheim?
Yeah.
Arrowhead?
Oh, was that the Staples Center?
Honda Center.
Anaheim, yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Well, the crowd response was unbelievable for us, because it was all over the news. And still to this day, I get great feedback from the fans, and you get some people on Twitter, but my whole thing is, if they don't know you personally, don't take it personal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's social media for you. You know, if you're going to wade in those waters, not everyone's going to call you the king of everything, right?
Internet thugs, yeah. Internet thugs. Yeah. Can't fight their way out of a web.
Roaches.
Yeah. So you finally come back. Your knee is healed up. Got a killer beard, looking cool. How does the PTP get back on track again?
We both got a text saying, bring your primetime players gear. And this was, again, off of, you know, being told one thing for weeks and him being told one thing for weeks. And then we just get a blanket text, hey, bring your primetime players gear. And I texted him and asked him if he knew what was going on, and he told me no. And then we got to TV that Monday. And I came in and saved him. And then the next day on SmackDown, you know, he came and did the same thing.
Yeah.
And
but one of the ideas that I had was bringing back Bob Backlund and having him being like my mentor, like my life coach.
Oh, yeah?
When I come back, I'm depressed, you know, I have no friends, I have no
Bob
partner.
Yeah, Bob can't cheer you up.
And Bob Backlund, he's really funny.
Yeah.
He's really funny. And just mingling with him whenever he's in the area, he just gives you his time, and I just think he's hilarious.
Yeah.
And I think that would have been funny, but I was just coming up with different ideas to get back on TV.
Throw anything as well, because when you came back, you were here for a while.
Yeah.
Doing, and I've had JTG on the show, we talk about just doing the JTG, just hanging out, not doing anything.
Yeah.
Nothing worse.
And that bothers me and him. I mean, for similar and different reasons. For me, it's like, you know, I'm 38 years old. I have two sons that I miss every damn week.
Right, being on the road.
Yeah, and I didn't come here, you know, just to collect a check. I can go
play domino.
Yeah,
eat catering.
Yeah, and I legitimately get pissed when I don't have an opportunity to do something. Even if it's a backstage, I feel like I've came and I've earned my check.
Mm-hmm.
And some guys are comfortable with that. Some guys are comfortable with just making X amount of money and laying low under the radar. But no, I truly believe I'm a star, and I needed to be.
And if you're going to be away from home,
yeah,
from your boys,
yeah, I'm going to make
you
it
better
work.
Be
yeah,
doing something.
Exactly.
I mean, all of us.
Yeah,
you know, we better be here working.
Yeah, you know too. I've seen your kids, and
I'm the same way. No days off. Yeah. I hate days off on the
right.
road. I hate them.
Yeah,
I hate them.
Yeah.
And that's the reason why.
Yeah.
You know, we're here to work, and
yeah.
if I'm making money, it's okay. If I'm just sitting around.
Yeah.
You know, and I've been there too. When I first came to the WWE, it was like that. It's so frustrating. Just a buzz killer of all
what
buzz
was the,
kills, you know?
The turnaround for you? Because I know you came
just,
from
just same thing, man. A lot of politics coming from WCW to WWE. It really was a real war at that point in time. You know, so there was a target on my back because I came by myself.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just kind of similar to what you guys are talking about. Just kind of getting to know the system, getting to know the politics and how to play it. And, you know, I knew that I would make it here because I'd made it everywhere else that I'd
right,
ever been.
Right.
I'd been to, you know, 10 different territories.
Right.
So just knowing that I could do it and just biting my tongue when I had to, and thank you, sir, may I have another when I had to, especially with the boss. And even though I wanted to punch some people in the face, I didn't.
Yep.
And then slowly but surely you gain your respect. I mean, that's the way to make it here is gaining respect, as you guys know. And when you first come in there, you know, like you said, who the hell are these kids? Who are these guys? Who are these guys coming in here? Then slowly, oh, that's a good match. That was good. Or knowing, like, if I work with this guy, he's going to make me look good.
Mm-hmm.
And he's, wow, can we work with him? And that's just how you make it work here, you know, in this world, you know. And I was going to ask you, too, you're talking about wanting to make things work and pitching ideas and stuff. And you mentioned the Backlund thing, which is great because he's totally nuts, which is in a good way.
Mm.
I used to have this little calculator thing when I was in Japan that if you type a word in it, it would tell you, it would say the name of the word and give you the definition. So we were on a bus in Japan. I'm reading a book and it has lugubrious. A state of melancholy feeling.
Hey.
Good word, Chris. That's a good word. Like this, like Texas Instrument thing, you know, like futile. Something that's not going to work. That's a good word, Chris. You can use that, you know. But you had, what was the guy's name?
Pancake Patterson.
Yeah. Please tell me about Pancake Patterson.
Yeah. Well,
were you involved in this too?
Yeah, I was Leon Bonecrusher Baker, but the people didn't see it on TV.
Yeah, people didn't see it.
Would you get cut?
No.
He had a match.
Oh,
so yeah, I had a match against JC.
Yeah.
Who's JC?
John Cena.
Oh, okay. Sorry. So you're Pancake Patterson. You're Leon Bonecrusher
Baker. But, big man, don't tell them why they call me Bonecrusher, please.
Me Bonecrusher.
Well, you're Bonecrusher Fred on the Indies.
Yeah.
Brother, I'm the Bonecrusher. I'm tough. Macho. Yeah. So tell me about this.
Well, both of us are big fans of, like, Martin Lawrence and
Tyler
Perry and Eddie Murphy and all those guys. And, you know, my whole thing is this is an entertainment company, and so I wanted to do things that, like, so my whole idea with that and his,
you want to play a character like those guys do.
Yeah. So play a like character, the but also to exactly. So, and it's like they were representatives of us when we weren't there, but then when people start asking about our uncle, you know, my uncle had gout, so he couldn't make it to all the trips. And Bone Crusher, you know, the reason that Bone Crusher was Bone Crusher.
Bone Crusher did a little time.
Yeah, he was like slowly, almost getting off probation, but no, he never wanted anybody to know why he was on probation to start with.
Okay.
But I just thought it was just fun. It was just a fun way to, you know, as good guys and baby faces to, like, have that in the book where we can go to that, you know.
It was like your alter ego.
Yeah, and they were going to advocate for us, and we had ideas about having, like, a match, you know, a number one. Like, they kept holding us back, and then our uncles came out and had a match, maybe against Los Matadors, in the overalls.
So Pancake was your uncle, and Bone Crusher was your uncle.
They'd be doing, like, old school boots, high boots, and Pancake's gout would flare up, and he'd have to come in to save him. And
Pancake had the gout.
Yeah.
So you made the appearance. Did you have the gimmick teeth in that?
No, I didn't have teeth.
Would you have?
I just had an afro.
You had a pipe, didn't you?
Yeah, I had an afro, a pipe, and some glasses. That was it.
And you played out Cena. You said he's been gone 10 years too long.
Yeah, right? Yeah. Oh, yeah.
The people don't want to see you, John.
So John said, you guys, I like your stick. I like what's going on. But, you know, we'll see. It's very entertaining. We'll see you at SummerSlam. And I was like, well, John, that's what you don't understand. They don't want to see you at SummerSlam, John.
And the crowd,
popped in.
So Pancake's getting over.
What the people want is to see the primetime players going for the WWE Tag Team Championships, and they popped on that too. You know?
And then what would you be doing in the background?
I'd just be pacing back and forth with my Tourette syndrome.
Leon has Tourette syndrome.
Bad.
He left. I didn't know that.
He just shoot off.
Scream and yell.
But I had fun because over the years, I've learned to be more entertaining because, you know, at the end of the day, you know, I love wrestling. I'm a wrestler. I love to grapple. I've watched you, Chris, in Japan, and but I've learned to be more entertaining hanging with this guy.
Mm-hmm. Right, because that's the part of the primetime player's gimmick.
Yeah,
because like you said, you're a man of few words. You're a naturally quiet guy.
I'm like Lynch from Seattle. He is, but I have a switch. But I like to do my dirty work in the ring.
Yeah, well, I think when you first started the NXT Invasion, I was like, is he a mute? Does he talk?
Yeah,
he's like, I talk.
Hey. How's it going?
Triple H always walks by every time Gary speaks to him. He's like, "What's up, Darren?" And he's like, "Darren always looks sleepy." And then Gary talked to him.
So Pancake and Leon only made one appearance, right?
Yeah, well, on TV, but we did like backstage segments.
We did tons of backstage. Yeah, tons. I got a great reaction on Twitter.
Yeah.
So what finally happened to cause Pancake and Leon to be escorted out the door?
Well, I don't even think they escorted them out the door. We just haven't done it. But I would like to do it again. We opened the Monday Night Raw with Pancake Patterson and John Cena.
What did Vince say?
Well, he loved it. We actually and this was another this is one of the things that I think helps us is because you know if I have an idea or. I'm not afraid of Vince. Like, you know, a lot of people are afraid of Vince.
He's an intimidating guy if you allow him to be,
if you allow him to be. But he's a man, you know, and he loves his company. He's put his all into it. And he loves to see people that are passionate about making things happen for his company.
And that have ideas.
All right. And so I had asked Fit Finley, you know, what he thought of it before, and we showed him the clip that we did a week before on the app.
What did Fit say?
And he loved it. He just died laughing. And so he was like, I say, Fit, just do us a favor and just go tell Vince that you got some people that they need to see him. And then, Fit went almost into the door. He's like, Vince, as soon as he said Vince, we just bust in there. Boom, you know, and we just.
As the guys.
As the guys. And it's like, what you going to do is put us on TV. Or put the primetime players on TV. We're here, and we just went off.
Did you have the wig on?
Had everything. Had the
pipe. What's he looking? What's he doing when you're doing this?
Oh, he's just laughing. He's just, oh, that's great, you know, blah, 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 and this and that. Him and Ed Koski were sitting in there, and they were just dying laughing. I said when I walked out, I said, now don't let this be the last time you see us, you know? And then the next week, we're on Monday Night Raw.
Opening Raw.
Yeah.
One of the biggest slots of the show. Yeah.
I was so nervous about doing it, and I was like, oh, Titus, should we go in the office?
He was like, I don't know, man. I don't know. He's like, you're going to get me fired, Titus.
I don't know. It's like, TV. Hey. It's busy.
Yeah, exactly. It was Raw, too, and he's just, he was scared. Damn near to the death.
So when you came out through the curtain, did you see Vince or did you one of those ones you just walk through? Did you go talk to him or?
Yeah, he just laughed. He just laughed. He laughs at us a lot. He had me throw up on TV. He thought I was gonna put some stuff in my mouth and just spit it out. And then we had a Thanksgiving special where we had to eat off between
eating contest with Khali, right?
With Khali,
eating. Eating against him.
Thanksgiving
dinner. I thought you were eating off of Khali. I'm like, that would make me puke, too.
No. Okay. Vicky Guerrero was, and so so we sitting there eating.
You're having a contest who can eat the most.
And I won. I was like, yeah, what I told you, Khali. And I'm just looking stuff, and I got all this stuff. And she was like, Vicky was like, Titus, congratulations. You get to have a match tonight on SmackDown. I was like, you know, and I was like down, and then she's like, against Cesaro. And then everybody was in the background like, ooh, and I was like looking concerned. And
with the full stuff.
Yeah. And so, yeah, we had the segment. And
so you went to the ring and threw up?
He spent me, and I went out, and Vince had told me to, you know, take the stuff and put it in my mouth and just spit it back out. And I was like, if I'm gonna do this, I'm gonna do it.
You're actually gonna
up? I threw up. Yeah, so I threw up.
How do you throw up?
I feel myself.
You swallowed, right?
Yeah, I swallowed that, but I also had like a bunch of water and stuff, like soda and water, so I knew it would come up like right away.
So you're drinking the stuff rather than just putting your mouth and spitting it. You're gonna drink it, and have it go down, and then come up again.
And so, I was throwing up, and then I went over and grabbed JBL's hat. And picked up the hat and threw up in his hat and put it on
Michael Cole. Dry heaving next to you.
Yeah.
You're starting to get that smell.
Yeah.
Legit dry heaving. Yeah.
You know who would have thrown up even worse? Jerry Briscoe. He had a really weak stomach.
Oh, somebody said that too.
All you would have to do is go up to him and go, stop it. And he'd be sitting there like if someone farted or something and you like spit it in his face or something, he would be sitting there going like the most comical, like almost fake wretched.
Stop it.
So yeah, he would have been definitely retching with you guys.
Yeah.
But what are some of the other things you've done? I know you guys did some backstage vignettes when you're getting back together, kind of making jokes about people or imitating people or what was it?
Yeah, we imitated all the tag teams.
Who did you imitate? Who was there?
Everybody, even the New Age Outlaws, but we did it like in a honoring way.
Uh-huh.
But Los Matadors, New Day,
the Detention,
the Ascension, yeah,
the Detention. The Detention.
We had some crappy,
right? You had the crappy shoulder pads on.
Yeah.
How do you imitate the Matadors?
We had some makeshift mask on.
Uh-huh.
And we had a rainbow because we were overseas and we couldn't find like a big like bull teddy bear or whatever.
Right.
So we had a rainbow bow stuffed animal. You know, he was
rainbow is my favorite color.
Yeah.
Ah.
Like little stuff just to throw in there.
And that's the first time I asked the question. You know?
For the hardcore fans.
Yeah. Like, tell me where you find some Puerto Rican bullfighters anyway. I'll wait.
So that's part of what you guys like to do, though. I mean, that like you mentioned earlier, Darren, about being more entertaining and having more fun in what you're doing.
It's more than just wrestling.
Yeah.
I realize that now after, you know, so many years, but you got to be entertaining.
It's amazing how the switch will flick at a certain point in time. Like you mentioned, doing this for as long as you have, and it is about, I've got to be big, and I've got to do bumps and take these falls, and then come out there and, you know, throw up on camera and, you know, play, you know, Leon Bonecrusher, and suddenly like, wow, this is fun.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like that's the real secret of how to make it in this business. There's a combination of the two that you have to have.
And I think also, too, I mean, just coming from some very, you know, it's just structure, you know, best guys play, whatever it may be. But you have to have a level of, like, I don't give a damn anymore.
Sure, absolutely.
You really do. And I'm at that point anyway. I've been at that point for a while. So I just don't care.
Yeah.
So, all right, if you have something for me, cool. If you don't, that's going to be cool, too. I used to really get upset, but then I, like, look around, and there are other people experiencing the same thing that I am. So I can't say this is a thing that's isolated towards me or for Darren or whatever.
No, this business is a wheel. I mentioned it earlier, okay? And Nexus guys, this is at the top.
Yeah.
And as soon as you got up here, pretty soon you're going to be down at the bottom again, and some of you guys are going to fall off. Same for all of us.
Right.
You're on top, you're in the opening match. You're in the middle match, you're on top. And that's just how it goes. Nobody stays on top forever.
Right.
I mean, Cena is a guy who's the exception.
Right.
You know, Hogan was the exception in the 80s. You know, Bob Backlund in the 70s, Bruno Sammartino. But that's the one guy. The rest of us, we're just here to basically get that guy over and make it entertaining.
Yeah, be a cog in the wheel.
That's right. You know,
I'll just, like I said, I'll be the best cog in the wheel I can while I'm under contract and then go do whatever it is.
You want everyone to see your cog?
Yeah.
Got a nice cog, nice big cog,
big, nice fat cog. Yeah.
So as we're getting ready to wind down here, how was it for you guys becoming the tag team champions?
It's 5 years of frustration, and it's really an honor.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of people like to say, oh, well, it's just WWE and it's predetermined and it's things like that. No, I'm in the history books. Me and Darren and I are in the history books with names like The Rock and Chris mm-hmm. Jericho and, you know, Hulk Hogan and Mick Foley and all them as enlisted as a champion. And I tell kids all the time when I speak to people, there's two things that people can never take away from you. A championship and an education. Once you win a championship, your name will always be in history. Once you get your education, you get your diploma, you get your degree, nobody can ever take that away from you.
That's right, yeah.
And so it's been, I mean, we've all, whether with a title or without a title, I've always represented the company the same because that's just who I am. And Darren's the same way.
I'll co-sign to that,
yeah.
Big man.
I feel like I'm a champion regardless if I have a title behind it or not. And it's the same way if I were working in a corporation, I'd feel like I was the president, or I would come to the work as the CEO or the president because that's the job that I want.
Well, I mean, you made a point, too, about how it's predetermined. Well, you know, winning an Oscar is predetermined, too. Someone decides if you win.
Right.
And that's what you're getting with a championship. Someone is deciding.
Right.
These guys are worthy with the performances mm-hmm. that they've done. We think they can handle this.
Right.
So it does mean a lot. And for mm-hmm. people to say, oh, it's nothing, that's
yeah,
not.
No, it's,
anybody
it's,
says that, it either doesn't know their time or they're lying.
Yeah. Yep, exactly.
You know?
Yeah,
how did it feel for you after all these years, Darren, being in the business
yeah,
longer
I mean,
than?
Yeah, it was a dream come true. And I never thought that it would happen. But it did, and at the end of the day for me, when I do my speaking engagements, it's all about connecting with those people that were, you know, kind of unsure about themselves and you know, wanting to take their own life. You know, that's really rewarding to me, you know, not only being a title holder, but being able to, you know, talk to some people and save lives.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's pretty heavy, man. Yeah.
Well, it's the truth. We've had a lot of conversations about the platforms that we have, you know, and been very supportive on both. I've been very supportive of him and LGBT.
Damn it, big man. Get it
yeah,
right.
Yeah,
LGBT.
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 You used
yeah.
to get it wrong, too?
I used to get it wrong.
Yeah, there's
yeah,
a lot of initials
yeah,
in there.
Yeah, yeah. Too much.
You done had plenty of practice.
I don't want anyone to yell at me if I get it wrong.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
They'll be coming for you quick.
But, there's this thing, you know, there's this one sentence here that says we're here to put smiles on people's faces. I think that if that's your number one goal, then it shouldn't matter whether you're a title holder or not. I think we all have that ability, whether we're WWE champion, tag team champion, you know, or backstage producer. It's just a matter of you willing to be able to go out and do it.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody here has accomplished something in life, and to be here, you know, is definitely an honor. But this is not. This is like it's like people that go to church. Just because you go to church doesn't mean that that's the only place that you should grow and learn and reach people. You should reach people. Really, you are the church. We are the church. We are people that go out and visit hospitals and troops and people. I did an interview last week, and they asked me what's the most gratifying is winning the WWE Tag Team Championship, the greatest part of my job. And I tell them, no, it's not. It's definitely the highest honor I've received and the highest accolade I've received. But really the greatest honor that I have with this company is to be able to go out and change lives. But whether it be via social media or, you know, visiting hospitals or doing the breast cancer awareness with the Susan G. Komen or be a star rallies or doing stuff on my own. I am who I am, and I've come to grips with that, you know. And when we take time to look at, like, well, you could be one situation from being paralyzed, or you could be one situation from being in the hospital next to your mom after she got diagnosed with breast cancer for the third time.
Mm-hmm.
When you take yourself and you put yourself in other people's position, it makes it a lot easier for you to remain humble. And this business won't change me a bit. It hasn't. Football never changed me. Because at the end of the day, I am who I am, who I said in the beginning of the mm-hmm. interview, a guy that comes from a single-parent home that has lived without, and I'm not afraid to go without again if it's for the right reasons and for the right cause.
You're using the platform here to spread that, and so are you, Darren. Final question, what's your favorite match that you've ever had? Start with you, Darren.
Favorite match I've ever had. It had to be my moment with Cena. When I got kicked out of the Nexus, one-on-one with him, going 15 minutes with him.
That's a long time, too, for Raw,
Yeah, main event. So that was a cool moment for me.
That's cool. How about you, Titus?
My favorite match, I have two of them. The first one would be the first time we went for the WWE Tag Team Championships at SummerSlam.
Against?
Against Kofi and Troop.
Okay.
And then the second one would definitely be my first match and longest match since I've been here, was with Rey Mysterio, and it was the greatest learning experience. And
that was your first match?
No, not my
first. Your first match with?
My first match with him.
With him, oh, okay.
Yeah, before they put him and Sin Cara together.
Gotcha.
And stuff like that. But yeah, he's just very fun. He kind of let me throw him around.
It's like wrestling with one of your sons.
Yeah, exactly.
Can you do this?
Yeah,
how about this?
Yeah. Just a great learning experience, like, you know, what I don't have to do, you know.
Right.
I don't have to do a whole lot, especially with guys like
that. Especially with the size like that, yeah.
You remember that one time, big man, I'm sorry, Chris. You remember one time overseas with Ray?
Yeah,
we couldn't find him. Yeah. And, like, I'm such a big fan of Ray that I want
to
know.
It was our first time going to, it was our first time ever working in a tag match.
Okay.
Yeah,
with
so
Ray.
I couldn't find him because I wanted to know, like, you know.
What's he going to do? Yeah.
You know, I don't want to drop him.
He started crying.
You know? So we did the match with nothing really. We just freestyled out there. And when I came to the back, I was just bawling my eyes out. Because, like I wanted to have a good match with him.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's had great matches with Brock and Kurt Angle, and I look up to Ray. So I was just upset because I feel like I did a terrible job. And then the next day, Ray, like, sat me down. It's like, I see how passionate you are, and that's great, and we're going to make it better, you know, and we made it better.
You got it.
The match was fine. Yeah. I just wanted to know, you know,
right.
what we were going to do.
Yeah.
Yeah, he wasn't nowhere to be found.
Yeah, he probably do that on purpose just to mess with you.
I was so upset.
All right, guys, it's great having you. You guys are both very inspirational and one of my favorite teams today. And hopefully you make yourselves millions of dollars. Millions of dollars.
I can say it all along. It's just a gimmick.
No, it's real. Millions of dollars. Millions of dollars. Maybe in pesos, maybe. Millions of pesos?
Yeah, pesos, definitely. We've made that.
Thanks again to the primetime players, Titus O'Neil and Darren Young. Great stories. I love Darren's stories. He's such a quiet guy, but he really came out of his shell to talk during this show. Wore his sunglasses the whole time, which I thought was cool. He was really chilling like a villain on Thanksgiving. And speaking of Thanksgiving, Canadian Thanksgiving is in October, and that's when I'm back in the WWE, also in September. Horrible segue. Doesn't matter. Y2J WWE Fall Tour begins September 11th, next week. Four countries over the next month and a bit. September 11th, Edmonton. September 12th, Calgary. September 25th, Toronto. That's for all my Canadian Jerichoholics. September 26th, Syracuse. 27th, Rochester. We got October 2nd is Trenton, New Jersey. October 3rd, New York City, which is Y2J's 25th anniversary. I'm bringing my friends down. Lance Storm is coming to Madison Square Garden. Don the Natural Callus, Cyrus, he's coming to Madison Square Garden. Dr. Luther, Lenny Olson, he's coming to Madison Square Garden. We are going to have a great anniversary, the Jericho Y2J 25th anniversary at Madison Square Garden, October 3rd. Super excited about that. Also heading to Saudi Arabia, heading to Mexico also for the WWE, and then we're going out with KISS October 30th on the KISS cruise. Then we're going to the Cinderblock party back to the UK and Europe with Nonpoint Sumo Psycho. That starts November 13th in Rotterdam, goes all the way across the main continent. Come check us out. Go to FozzyRock.com for all the cities and venues and ticket information. I want to thank you for everyone that comes to the Fozzy shows. I want to thank everyone that came and saw me on the Y2J summer tour, and you're going to be there on the Y2J fall tour. I want to thank you guys who download Talk is Jericho twice a week for free, which you're able to do thanks to the great Talk is Jericho sponsors, PokerStars, DraftKings. Don't forget, use my promo code Y2J to play for free. SeatGeek, use Chris J to get a $20 rebate on your first purchase. And of course, Amazon, which is still the easiest way to support this show. Anything you want or need on Amazon. Listen, you got to get the new Iron Maiden record. It is amazing. Book of Souls. It's a grower, not a shower, but when it starts getting into your head, you are going to love it. And the packaging is insane. For the CDs, for the LPs, I'm going to buy them both. I'm going to do that through Amazon. Book of Souls comes out this Friday. And of course, this Friday, Well, I'll tell you who's going to be on the show this Friday at the end of the show. But if you're going to buy Book of Souls, do that on Amazon. Buy whatever you want. Just help out Talk is Jericho in the process. You go to podcast1.com, click on the supporter show sponsors banner at the top of the page, then hit the Talk is Jericho button. Amazon links in USA, Canada, A, UK. Every time you do that, Amazon kicks back a little cash to the show. So we can do this for you free for twice a week. No extra fees, all hidden challenges. Podcast One, click on the supporter show sponsors banner at the top of the page, then hit the Talk is Jericho button. All right, that's it for Talk is Jericho. Thanks to the primetime players this Friday. I've been working on this one for 6 months. To get the lead singer of Iron Maiden, Bruce Dickinson, is going to be on Talk is Jericho this Friday. We're going to be talking about the Book of Souls. We're going to talk about the Power Slave Tour. We're going to talk about World War I biplanes. We're going to talk about songwriting. And we're going to talk about when he cut his hair and the reactions that he got for cutting it and the reactions he got when he had long hair. Plus, we'll talk about why his cousin Chad's band, Cletus, and why Bruce Dickinson knows them. So much cool stuff coming up with Bruce, one of the greatest singers of all time, one of my biggest heroes in heavy metal, in rock and roll. Bruce Dickinson, Iron Maiden, here this Friday to discuss the Book of Souls and to discuss everything else we talked about. So we'll see you then. We'll see you, Bruce, up the irons and up the abboys.
You can download new episodes of Talk is Jericho every Wednesday and Friday at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.